Howdy do, buggeroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. Still kind of weird to say that. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have, I believe they've been dubbed the Dream Team. I have John Martellaro with me. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning, Kelly.
Hi, glad to have you with me. Also with me, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, crew. Yeah, we named ourselves the Dream Team. I don't think anyone else has called us that. It just makes John and I feel good about ourselves.
I didn't say it was an official designation. I just said it was it a is. Designation. Yeah. So, the first thing we want to talk about today, well, everything we're going to talk about today, I'm going to give a little spoiler for the rest of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about 5G and what it is and why it matters. So, John, I'm going to ask you first. We have 4G now, most people do, and we've seen a lot of talk about 5G, and if you have AT&T, they're trying to perpetrate this story that you have 5G by making the little thing in the corner of your phone say 5GE,
which that's not really 5G.
Is dumb, I know.
Yeah.
But what is it?
Well, as you know, as iPhone users, we've walked through a succession of technologies from the original personal communication systems through the original AT&T system on the original iPhone, then to 3G and then 4G. And each one of these technologies has brought us lower latency and higher throughput speeds. Mm-hmm. And in about 2015, engineering circles were starting to come around to the idea of 5G, then the next step in evolution, which as it rolled out originally, it was a very high frequency system with, you know, gigahertz frequencies, 10 to 40 gigahertz, millimeter wavelengths. And the virtue of high frequency is a high bandwidth. You can push a lot of data through. The problem with 5G technology as it has evolved over the years is carriers have come to realize that it's really only suitable for short ranges in inner cities. Millimeter wavelengths don't travel very well through really bad weather, although Verizon's had some recent tests that suggest it's not as bad as they feared. Mm-hmm. Doesn't travel through brick, mortar, trees very well. And yeah. It's a line of sight technology.
It's very short range. It's sort of...
It is. It's just like a few hundred meters, maybe mm-hmm. 500 meters in the max. Okay. And so... Over time, the carrier started realizing that this was a boon for inner cities where you could have cell towers and repeaters on attached to every telephone pole in every building in an inner city. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't going to cut the mustard when it came to suburban or rural areas.
Right.
And so about 2017, T-Mobile, which wasn't initially focusing on business applications and high speed original wavelength, and the first nominal band is now called millimeter wave high band.
Okay.
Started lobbying, and the FCC approved two new bands called mid band and low band. And the low band is something you may have seen advertised on TV by T-Mobile. I was watching the LSU Clemson game, and there was an ad advertising about how T-Mobile's 5G is so special because it doesn't travel for just blocks, it travels for miles. Mm-hmm. Well, what they're invoking is the low band version, which is 600 megahertz. That's a whopping half meter wavelength, you know, 500 millimeters, not just a few millimeters. And so it travels through bad weather, travels through glass, brick buildings, trees. And the trade-off, though, is that this longer wavelength doesn't support as high a bandwidth, and so you get speeds as being written about nowadays. You see various testing going on that are on the order of same as 4G LTE, maybe 10 to 20% faster, maybe at best 50% faster. But the nice thing about it is that the way the carriers are building out their networks is that AT&T and Verizon are focusing on the inner city and business, and Sprint and is focusing on mid-band, and T-Mobile is focusing on low-band for consumers that are in, you know, normal suburban areas.
Okay.
And so if you build the phone right, you can do a transition from regions where there's millimeter wave if you've got a subsystem in your phone for that. And then as you travel around, if the carrier supports all three bands, then you can gracefully transition to 5G, hopefully with lower latencies than 4G, but still not as great.
So
so you can have the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. So this is where I'm going to jump in.
Well, this is where I was going to ask you to jump in, because that's sort of the layout in the U.S.
There is no 3-band 5G phone shipping.
Correct.
But according to our favorite Apple analyst, Ming-Chi Kuo, the next iPhone, there may be one version of the next iPhone that can do that.
Okay.
That could at least could access a network that, as John's outlined, that could do both the job of using the kind of longer range ones, more reliable bandwidth, and also when it's available, then cash into the faster version of 5G.
Yeah, from what I read, the millimeter wave antennas are tricky business.
I suspect you are totally correct. And so this is what Apple appears to... We know, we can pretty much expect that iPhone 5G is going to appear this year.
Okay.
Yes.
I think we're all pretty confident about that. And what it looks like, according to this piece of analysis anyway, is that there might be two versions of that. You know, let's call one, for instance, the iPhone 5G Pro. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be able to access the very fast kind of network that John has outlined.
Okay.
Whereas, and also the slower, more reliable version, whereas one is only going to be able to access the former.
Okay.
You know, Ming-Chi Kuo has a good reputation, but I kind of have an uneasy feeling that it would be a bad idea for Apple to break out his phones by bands, because that would just generate so much confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
customers would go into the Apple store and say, I want to buy a 5G phone, and right away the conversation goes downhill from there.
I wonder if
5G do you want? Do you want the low band 5G? Do you want the...
Yeah, I'm 5G? Inclined to agree with you on this. I think it is quite confusing for consumers.
Yeah.
Like, you might be able to do it in some kind of, like I say, an iPhone 5G Pro.
Right.
And say that's the really, really fast one or something.
I think it would be handled like the cameras are now. Sort of
that
like
kind of vibe, yeah.
Yeah, like we don't really spend a bunch of time. Like they break it down in the press event for the phone, but they don't break it down like in the rest of the world. Like you're not seeing commercials that are like, this phone has these cameras, this phone has these cameras, right, and this phone has these cameras. Which do you like? So I think, if anything, we'll get one 5G phone. It'll be high-end because it's sort of Apple's proof of concept to make sure it all works the way they want it to, that they can fit it all in, you know, the biggest possible device. We don't know anything about what the technology is like on the receiving end, like for a phone, for any phone,
I mean,
to carry that around.
What's interesting to me is that people have complained about Apple being behind the curve because there are 5G phones shipping right now.
Mm.
The single-band 5G phones in Apple's.
I mean, I have friends who have Android phones that are 5G compatible, and there are some parts of London where there is a 5G network,
mm-hmm.
And they have access to it. And obviously, because not many people are using it, it's super, super fast.
Right.
I think...
Well, CNBC is reporting that Samsung in February is going to ship a 3-band 5G phone.
Right.
Samsung can do it. Apple can do it.
You would think so. And so that kind of makes me think that this Ming-Chi Kuo prediction might be right. Whether they do, in terms of that there will be a 3-band 5G phone, whether they add to the confusion by having, a 2-band one,
mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure. I think John's point about consumer confusion is quite an important one.
Well,
I mean, there's already considerable confusion about the bands because the carriers never talk about that. They just talk about 5G.
Well,
and so
sure.
There's this opportunity for marketing confusion as well.
Well, before we get too far into the marketing of it, let's talk a little bit about the network. Charlotte, you said some parts of London some parts of London do have 5G, but not all of it. And part of
it's very small parts of London.
Well, but But in order for there to be more, somebody has to come build that network. And there's a company that's very interested in doing that in the UK, from what you've told us.
Yes. Huawei are like, hi, guys. We build 5G networks. And America's like, yeah, not with any of our friends, you don't.
Okay.
So the British government has sort of always been open to 5G, to Huawei building some parts of it. They've tried to differentiate the kind of it from, in terms of kind of secure and non-secure, sensitive, non-sensitive, that kind of way, those mm-hmm. parts of the network. And it wants Huawei to build the less, the bits of the network that need less security, basically, that it's less concerned about. The problem with 5G is that that differentiation is pretty obsolete, as I understand it. And so there's, understandably, from a firm like Huawei, with big links to the Chinese state, a lot of concern. There's some senior politicians in the UK who have raised concerns. The US apparently turned up yesterday with a dossier telling the British politicians not to allow this. It's a controversial issue. It sounds like a kind of techie, nerdy issue that most voters and general users won't be interested in, but it's very, very important. This is national technology infrastructure, and it really matters. Right. And there are legitimate concerns from Britain and its allies about allowing Huawei access to such a 5G network. Mm-hmm. There are countries around the world that have already banned Huawei building their 5G networks.
Right. And actually, Charlotte, you wrote a piece in May of this year about the UK, the former head of MI6, saying that yep. letting Huawei do this would be a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And then additionally, like, and one of the things that you noted in that piece was that at that time, reports were coming out that Dutch security sources found a backdoor on a major Dutch telecoms equipment that came from Huawei. So it's not like people are saying, oh, we just don't want China involved. But I think what they're saying is we don't want the Chinese government involved, and that means Huawei too, is kind of the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah, look, we know that with so many of these big Chinese firms, the differentiation between them and the state is often so minimal as to be obsolete.
Yeah.
And there are huge concerns about the security implications around Huawei. Look, people use Huawei phones and other products the whole time. Fine. But this, as I say, is about national infrastructure and, you know, our technology networks. And there are concerns. There can't not be.
Right.
And like I say, you know, one of the British politicians who was on TV today speaking about it described, kind of made the comparison of letting a fox into a hen house. It's Tom Tugendhat, who's a very senior lawmaker. He chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee here.
Okay.
And he basically said, you can individually guard every chicken, but isn't it better not to let the fox into the hen house in the first place? Mm. You know, the UK government is saying the security and resilience of the UK's telecom networks is of paramount importance. It's kind of really trying to kick the can down the road. But we need, you as users and consumers, we need this infrastructure. As businesses, we need this infrastructure, right? Like, those networks are the next stage. And anyone, countries that are unable to fully roll them out are going to be left behind.
Mm-hmm. And the longer term, like, and the longer term implications of this are, you know, like, if you go, well, what does it matter if this company wants to build it, right? Is that if you let them build it, they have to maintain it. It's their hardware. It's their network. It's their infrastructure that they've put in place. So Huawei would have unfettered access to their own hardware, one would imagine. And then unfettered access to all the traffic that goes across that hardware.
Right. And that's the bigger issue. It's the biggest concern, you're totally right, is about access to the data.
Yeah.
Particularly secure data that might be transferred over a 5G network.
And that's the part that I wonder about is, you know, like when you think this through and go, well, if they build it, it's going to be up to them to care for it. You know, they have to be able to replace things that go bad and, you know, as capacity is needed, be able to increase it and all of that. And so That means they have unrestricted access to their piece of the network, and they could have more access than most people would be comfortable with if they, you know, to the rest of the network in order to make sure everything works, you know, from this other place to Huawei hardware, things like that. So it seems like something that would, that definitely deserves a good long look, since this is a company that has a kind of a sketchy history with all of this.
Yeah, it's a historical issue and a present issue. People are concerned about the access the Chinese state would have to our secure data. That's sort of the beginning and the end of it. But the point is, Huawei do have the technological capability to build these networks.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no dispute about that. That is, you know, they do have that technological capability. But other firms do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you want it to be Huawei? If you can get other firms to do it, does it have to be a firm that might risk the integrity of your... It might risk the integrity of your network.
Yeah, it's, and I think part of this is also because more people are aware of this. Regular folks, you know, people who listen to our show who aren't necessarily people who are super technical people, like some people are, but not everyone necessarily is. Not everyone works in mobile infrastructure. And, you know, data and various sorts of things like that. So because not everybody does that, but everybody does know, you know, Facebook's been compromised and this is a thing that happened to your data. And this is another, like, you know, like we just talked about on our show here, you know, yesterday, online scams and some things that you can do to avoid them. And being more aware of everyone's security and making that a priority. And so I think, you know, as this new network gets rolled out, that's a valid question. I think it's a thing that should be asked. And I think more people are asking it as a result of, you know, shining the light on more of this sort of thing. And people are more worrying about, instead of being excited about being online, is it safe? Is it secure? What's happening to my information? Like, now that I'm here, you know, what can I really be doing with it?
Tell me a bit about the kind of, what's the situation with the rollout of 5G in the US, basically? Is it in metro areas yet? Are there any states that have it? What's going on here?
The different carriers have different strategies. T-Mobile has been focusing on the low band. Sprint has been focusing on the mid-range band. That's why they want to merge, because T-Mobile's eager to have that mid-range infrastructure. The big carriers, Verizon and AT&T, have been focusing primarily on the millimeter wave in the big cities where they can charge customers for the high-performance infrastructure, although AT&T's got some elements of the low band as well. So each carrier has its own business strategy and supports phones that support that strategy, even though they may be monoband phones. And so it's kind of a bit of a mess right now. It'll be a while, maybe couple years before one can say that the major carriers cover all the bands and there's multi-band phones available and everything's cool. So 2020 is kind of a transition year. I mean, the first availability, but in piecemeal and in major cities and trial cases here and there, but not widespread yet.
Okay. And so that goes sort of hand in hand with there not being a lot of phones to take advantage of it, for the most part, because there's not a lot of network out there
in order
to utilize any of that. So it's not going to matter quite so much, you know, while that's the case.
All things considered, September of 2020 for Apple is not very late at all. It's rather early, in fact.
Yeah.
Charlotte, I have a question for you.
Hit me.
In the United States, we have some very large telecom companies that make billions of dollars a year and have lots of expendable income to invest in technology and infrastructure. So you wouldn't, I would guess that if AT&T and Verizon wanted to, they could build their own 5G equipment. It might cost them a little more, but it would meet U.S. security standards. I don't know if they're doing that or contracting with Qualcomm in some cases. I haven't done any research on that, but are there any companies in UK that are on par with the size of AT&T and Verizon where they could build their own equipment instead of buying Huawei's?
So I'm not sure about that in terms of equipment. There are, you know, Vodafone, those kind of companies are looking to roll out 5G and they're testing and they're rolling it out in cities. And as I said earlier, there are some parts, for example, in London where you can access 5G.
Is it their equipment?
Using their own equipment.
That I'm not sure. I suspect it could be a combination of the two. It's a good question. I don't actually know completely the answer. It's an interesting question. I don't know if it's kind of white label kit.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to the two of you finding out.
Yeah.
I'll see what John finds out from the US, and I'll find out what Charlotte can tell us from the UK. And when we know more, I'll have both of you back to talk about it. That's going to do it for us today. I hope this has been helpful. If you have more questions about 5G and what it means for you, we're happy to answer those. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And you can leave comments in the show notes. We definitely want your feedback. And we want to be able to make sure that we're giving you the information that you need. So with that, I want to thank you both for being here today. John, thank you for dropping by.
Thanks for having me. Bye, Charlotte. And
Charlotte, thanks for being here.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.